This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Just got a bit of a breaking news flash. First reported by former NFL player Legger Doosable. Now confirmed by Adam Schefter that the Seahawks are trading for Carlos Dunlap. They'll be giving up draft compensation. The move should be announced later today. We'll be working double time to confirm that has happened, but it appears that the Seattle Seahawks have in fact added an edge rusher in Carlos Dunlap. Everybody's been waiting for it, and anyone wailing about why they didn't add Everson Griffin probably now understands who they were looking at.
I'm excited about this. You are bringing in a guy who has been a part of an organization that stinks for a long time, a guy, though, who has proven that he can produce in the past. And I think that chip on his shoulder that he definitely has had over the last couple of weeks with the Cincinnati Bengals, I think that's something that could potentially be something we see angrily on the field. Look, I was going to be happy with anyone that they brought in, even if it was a name that I didn't recognize. This is a name that I really recognize. This is a guy that was a part of, I think, a really good Bengals team. If you go back to 2015, he was ranked a top 100 player, a Pro Bowler. In 2016, in 2017, 2018, he gets the contract extension. This is a plus player. How much of a plus player, how much of a fit he is, how long it'll take him to assimilate, those are all real questions. But credit John Schneider. He knew that the Seahawks needed something. He makes the move. And we will see how he fits in to this Seahawks defense. But you've got to think that once he's ready to go and once he passes through whatever protocols that he's got to, that he's going to be someone that's playing on a regular basis.
Seahawks are getting a veteran. Carlos Dunlap entered the league in 2010. He was a second-round pick. He has been one of the more underrated but consistent pass rushers in this league. He only has 1 year of double-digit sacks, but he has seven or more sacks in each of the past seven seasons. That's really consistent production. He is a guy that is going to get you between 7 and 10 sacks every single year he suits up. I think one of the big things about him and makes him different than some of the other possibilities like Tack McKinley or like Everson Griffin is that he's a pretty complete defensive end, and he's a true defensive end rather than a guy that just rushes the passer. He's someone Seattle can play as either their pass rushing Leo, but also someone they can put at the other end of the line, a guy that has a little bit more run stuffing responsibilities than they did. Basically the spot that Red Bryant played so well for Seattle.
He's also a giant, 6'6", 285. Right. And you know, you don't have someone like that on this defense. You don't have a physical freak. You lost that in Clowney. Clowney wasn't even that big, by the way, but he looked a little bit bigger than he actually was. This is just a massive load of a human being. And I think, yeah, you can use him in a variety of different ways. Is this going to fix the defense overnight? I think we have to accept that the answer is no. And I think that there also will be some sort of corresponding move with this trade because he does have a pretty significant cap figure attached to him. And I have a hard time believing that the Bengals are going to pay said cap figure. But I'm really thrilled right now, Danny. I think that they needed a shot in the arm. And it seems like this is the second time. This is the second time in two losses to the Cardinals where the Seahawks go and make a corresponding move within the week that makes you feel better. Marshawn Lynch last year, this year, it's Carlos Dunlap.
Oh, I'm more excited about this than I was.
Same. I wasn't like that was like a, ooh, great, like feelings kind of move. This is a, I actually think he can contribute kind of move.
And it's also a case of John Schneider waiting out for value, waiting out to get a guy who probably wasn't available at the start of the season. Wasn't available in the offseason. Carlos Dunlap is a veteran player, and the Cincinnati Bengals operate differently than any other franchise in this league. They do not tend to trade guys.
Nope.
And the reason he's available right now is because he's upset at the way he was being used. To the point where after last week's game, in which he was used, I think, in 13 plays, he posted a listing for his house, basically a real estate listing on Twitter, making it very clear that he didn't have an interest in staying in Cincinnati, was ready to move on, and Seattle ends up being the destination for him.
More details on this per Ian Rappaport. This deal includes a player and a pick, not just a pick. So the question is, what kind of player are they going to send along? And I would imagine there's a couple of positions that the Seahawks have extra depth at. I would say wide receiver. I would say tight end. Maybe those are positions where they would decide to throw in an extra player. Do you have an idea? Because we're just, at this point, spitballing here.
I think it might be BJ Finney.
Hmm.
And the reason that I think that is maybe not because of how coveted he was, but because I think that Seattle is probably looking to balance books at this point as well. They've got to clear some room out to make, and there's a couple different ways to do that. Carlos Dunlap is someone I think he's still owed about $6 million for this season. And you have to make room for him. They don't have the cap space flat out. Now, it's easy to create cap space. You just restructure some of your veterans' contracts, and they've got more than enough guys to be able to do that. But it's possible that's that. If it was going to be a younger player or someone that was it's possible that a tight end, Jacob Hollister.
Yeah.
Is someone that could have some value for another team. The receivers that you mentioned, I don't think Seattle's ready to move from any of their receivers unless there was an interest in somebody like Philip Dorsett, but I think Seattle still wants to see what it can get for him.
I think they really like David Moore, too. And Moore would be, I think, the guy that would probably get you the most on return that would make you maybe have to give up the least amount of draft capital in a deal like this. Curious as to what the draft pick will be. I think your theory on BJ Finney is a sound one because Joe Burrow might die this year with the amount of hits that he has been taking. Seriously, he has been getting pulverized behind that weak offensive line in Cincinnati, and they've clearly, Cincinnati, seen BJ Finney in the past with Pittsburgh.
Now, we talked about in the first hour that when you make a move at this time of year, you can go for name recognition, and that player is going to be more expensive. And that player also is probably going to be available because they're not producing at the level that their salary would indicate. This falls into that category. It's a little different because it's clear that that is a team that is going in a different direction, and a player that is not, I think the exact word he had is, they're running experiments and I don't have time for that. This is a veteran in his 11th season who is not interested in sort of seeing where he fits in into a rotation. I love the fact that Seattle is making a move to get a guy who is with proven production as opposed to the best young guy that hasn't panned out that's available. I love that they're getting him rather than Tack McKinley. Honestly, I thought it was going to be someone like Tack McKinley or another younger pass rusher that didn't have as high of a salary, that wasn't working out where he was, and Seattle decides, hey, let's take a flyer on him, see if we can help. This is getting a guy that you believe will not just fit into your rotation, but can be an upgrade and potential starter by the end of the year.
Right, and I think now you have to wonder, what do the reinforcements that your defense is going to get, what kind of a difference are they going to make? Because it's Snacks Harrison, who the move that the Seahawks made yesterday, getting rid of Rush as far as a defensive lineman, that likely means that the Seahawks are about to put Snacks Harrison on the active roster. I don't know if we're going to see Jamal Adams on Sunday. It does sound doubtful. Jordan Brooks is already back in the mix. And now you bring in someone like Carlos Dunlap. And again, the immediacy of which I don't know 100%. I don't know how long it's going to take for someone to be put into the Seahawks protocol for COVID and all of that after being on another team. I'm actually very curious as to how that works. But how much of an impact can these guys that are coming for the Seahawks have and changing this defense from what it has been, which is one of the worst in the league?
You're looking for impact down the road, though, right? Like, this isn't – he, as far as I understand, he has been tested – so he doesn't have to go through the full 5 days of quarantine and testing before he's even eligible to get onto the field. He just needs to test negative once he gets here. He's already been in a testing protocol. But I don't think the question is, hey, can he be ready to play this Sunday? You want him ready to play in December and into the playoffs.
Yes, I agree. Yes.
You're 5-1, and that gives you some flexibility right now. You're not managing a disaster and, oh, we've got to get things turned around just so we get to the playoffs. This is a move, and maybe in some ways that's why you look at Seattle has clearly taken their defense as more of a work in progress than a finished product. I mean, think about this. Is they added Jamal Adams in July. They signed Damon Harrison in September. Was it even October? It was even October because he's been there 2 weeks. He hasn't played in the past two games. And now you're adding Carlos Dunlap. This is a group that they're still working toward a final product. And that's fine because you're a team that's looking for the boost to be in the playoffs. I don't think anybody's worried about Seattle making the postseason or feeling that, hey, they're not going to make the playoffs if they don't make some significant changes. You're worried about their ability to make a Super Bowl run if they don't make changes. And getting Carlos Dunlap, a guy who has had between 7 and 10 sacks for 7 consecutive years, absolutely does that. And this is not a one-trick speed rusher guy. It's somebody with some size who has a huge amount of a large body of work there with the Cincinnati Bengals.
How long do you think it'll take the Seahawks to figure out how to best use him? There were times last year where I wondered if they 100% knew how to use Jadeveon Clowney best, but I think every team's had that problem. Houston's had that problem. Tennessee's had that problem too.
This is a different player, though, right?
Yes,
like he is very much a 4-3 defensive end. Like there's not any mystery about this player's makeup or how he's been. Clowney's always been that, is, and it hasn't helped that he's played in defenses in different templates. And he's like, hey, when he got here, he liked playing in a 4-3. Then when he got to Tennessee, he talked about how much success he had playing in a 3-4. He's never clearly had that type of role. He's been a great pass rusher who's actually weight-wise is more and has the speed to play linebacker. Carlos Dunlap is a straight-up defensive end. Like, he is a regular old-fashioned. He's not a converted linebacker who's a rush end. He is a defensive end who's able to stop the run and be able to consistently pressure the passer off of the edge.
He had a really good year last year, you know, on a bad Bengals team that could not win, could not hold leads, did not have an offense backing them up. And can he tap into that is going to be, I think, the big question for when he eventually does get on the field. And I strongly believe that a guy who's ticked off is a great player, person to trade for. And he was clearly sick of it in Cincinnati. And the hope is that he will continue to bring that same energy, that same anger that he had in Cincy that made him put his house up for sale in the middle of a game to the Seahawks.
This is the kind of season where you give a little bit too, right? To get a guy like Dunlap, you're not as worried about what he'll provide next year as a guy that can put you over the top this year. It's part of the reason why I was like, hey, if it takes trading a second round pick to go get Yannick Ngakoue and you don't have a pick at any point in the first 3 rounds, do it. But why not go ahead and give yourself because you've already spent so many resources believing that this is a year that you can get over the hump. Firing what few bullets you have left in future draft pick compensation. And this is a move that very much falls within that. This is not, we'll get a guy and take a chance and see if he works into the rotation. This is a guy that you believe is going to be a frontline player for you by the time December gets here.
Yeah, and you don't have many of those right now. I mean, on the defensive line, who do you legitimately trust for the entirety of a game? I mean, I'm almost there with Benson Mayoa, but I'm not quite. Jaron Reed has the one game where he plays really well a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't see that Sunday night. They need somebody there, and stands to reason that he's going to be better than most.
It is Danny and Gallant. If you're just joining us, reports from both Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter that the Seahawks will be acquiring Carlos Dunlap for not only draft pick compensation, but a player. We'll pass along to you as soon as we know who that player is. Right now, it's time for us to get around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
DJ.
Wow. Well, good Seahawks news there. But first up here, when asked this week about the struggling Cowboys, Jerry Jones says, quote, "There's no leadership void in my eyes on this team."
Yeah, he's full of it. There is a huge leadership void. Signing Mike McCarthy to that deal that they did, a ridiculous extension, was just suspect to begin with. What had Mike McCarthy done while he was with the Green Bay Packers? He won a Super Bowl in 2010. This team has rolled over and died in back-to-back weeks. And yes, I think that a lot of blame does need to go on the players. They didn't even stand up for Andy Dalton after he nearly got decapitated in that game. But Mike McCarthy, it all starts with him. And he has not changed that culture from where it was with Jason Garrett, which is the reason that they brought him in. In fact, it is worse. I think that's a definitive statement. It is worse. It was worse with Dak. It's worse without Dak.
Is that his fault? He's been brought in to be a CEO. he's an offensive play caller who's not calling offensive plays right now. It's Kellen Moore. They've got a defensive coach in there in Mike Nolan. I don't find myself feeling that, you know what, this is all on McCarthy. He's certainly not helping it. He's not ultimately a coach's job is to bring everybody together. I don't know, man. I think that this falls uphill to Jerry Jones. When you try to bring in a guy who's just goosing things a little bit, I don't know. I think this was flawed from the get-go.
Well,
they brought
in
a coach to be a CEO, and they need an actual football coach.
Yeah, it's a bad hire by Jerry, but it's also a bad job by McCarthy, too, right? I mean, if you're asking him to be the CEO, you can't be the CEO that's basically not there, that's essentially has the title but isn't doing any of the aspects of the job that he's supposed to.
Well, speaking of former Cowboys, Dez Bryant has officially joined the Ravens practice squad.
Good for him. I'd like to see what Dez has left in the league. I don't think he's younger than I thought. He turns 32 in November. 31 years old, hasn't played in a couple years.
He might be 38 in football years, though. And I don't know that this necessarily helps out Baltimore that much. What's this going to add to Baltimore's wide receiver core? And while I don't think Antonio Brown should be in the NFL again, honestly, I feel like everyone should have just said bye, sorry. This was the team that should have brought him in. They don't have any wide receivers that can consistently be relied upon, and you need to have more weapons for Lamar Jackson should the Ravens fall in a hole. Dez Bryant does not strike me as the kind of weapon that's going to change the Ravens passing game to a point that when they fall in a two-score hole, that they can now dig out of it.
Yeah, he doesn't fundamentally change the equation. He's probably primarily a red zone target, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's probably what you're looking for him as more than anything else. If he comes in and catches two or three scoring passes, you feel like this is a good investment at this point.
After having a near-perfect completion percentage after OBJ went out, both quarterback Baker Mayfield and wide receiver Jarvis Landry both rebuked the notion that their offense is better without the star receiver.
Statistically, it is, though. And I don't want to ream on Odell Beckham Jr. for the sake of reaming on him, which a lot of people have done. I thought Bomani Jones on the Right Time podcast did an interesting job of laying out, like, people criticize Odell Beckham Jr. for being this guy who wants the football and throws temper tantrums when he doesn't get it, when that's not actually the reality. That's more of an Antonio Brown thing. But for whatever reason, statistically, it does bear out that when Baker Mayfield, and we saw it, you know, his rookie season, when he doesn't have Odell Beckham Jr. out there, he looks a lot better. And that's when we, Danny, I think, really thought that the guy maybe had a chance to be successful in the NFL. It was before that. He played a really good game after Odell Beckham Jr. went down against the Bengals. It's the Bengals, but something is here. There is something to work with if you are a take artist and you think that Baker's better without him.
Yeah. I like the way Baker Mayfield is playing this year, and I think that that team has a shot to be good. They're not great, but they've got a shot to be good. I don't think the loss of Odell Beckham unlocked anything. I don't know if he was going to be the kind of player to put them over the top, though. I don't think they're going to suffer for not having him, if that makes sense. I don't think he was getting in the way of anything, but there is something about Baker trying to make both he and Jarvis Landry happy while also executing that offense in the way it's called, because they've got a fair number of weapons now with Austin Hooper, with the other tight end, David Njano. The players that they have there, I like Cleveland's team. I don't think Odell Beckham's injury derails them. And you look at his success receiving, he is an awfully productive player, like historically productive through there. Yeah, I don't think his absence helps.
It doesn't.
I don't think it's going to hurt him either.
It's weird, that statistical dynamic. But to say that they're better off without him,
yeah,
I don't think you can accurately say that. Just statistically, it does bear out, which is what makes it so strange. Like, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm terrified with Odell Beckham Jr. in the Browns lineup. I'm not really thinking twice if it's just Jarvis Landry.
I don't think Beckham's problem is a demand for the ball. I think Beckham's I think the issue that Beckham has is he wants everybody to see how much he cares about everything. And so everything becomes this. It's just got to be more important. And that ramps up pressure on everybody around him. And then he'll withhold praise from people. And the whole thing with Eli Manning was just dumb. Like, I don't think he was wrong. I just don't know why you would say that about your quarterback and a guy who's won two Super Bowls in the franchise.
The Panthers have released former first-round defensive back Eli Apple.
Weird career for him.
Yeah, really strange career.
His mother...
Everybody hated him in New York, right?
Yes.
Like, all those dudes disliked him.
His mom was at one point a celebrity because of her tweeting, too. Can you think of one thing that the guy did on the football field since joining the league?
Yeah, I remember a game he had with the Saints. I do remember a game he had with the Saints because he went there after it and he was... Yeah, I do remember seeing him play relatively well. I've also seen him get toasted with the Saints. It's very strange because he was like a mid-first-round pick, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, 10th, no, right? Seattle doesn't want him before anybody asks. No.
Well...
Dude's been on three teams. No.
Yeah, but...
The answer's no.
Well... Your third cornerback is Trey Flowers.
No,
you trust him?
He's young.
No.
Top 10 talent. Do you know what school he went to? He went to the Ohio State University, Danny. Do you really want to anger all the insufferable Ohio State types?
Everyone from Ohio State, there must be a major there in that's called telling people what you think. Everyone that comes out of that school, and this is accepting, I hope that G. Scott Jr. is an exception. I am rooting for G. Scott.
I am as well.
I'm rooting for Baby G a great deal, and I'm talking very specifically about one media member.
Albert Breer.
Yeah. The insistence upon making his opinion part of any storyline is, I just wonder if there was a major if there was an ability to major at Ohio State, and it was called telling you what I think, or telling you where I'm at. Yeah.
I wish that there was a spin job that he was putting out there right now about why Eli Apple did not work out with the Giants and the Saints and the Panthers. Perhaps
Carlos Dunlap coming to the Seattle Seahawks. We'll tell you more about that next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Got some updates on the details of the Seahawks trade for Carlos Dunlap. It is for a player. The player is BJ Finney. It is including a pick. That pick is a 7th-round pick. Essentially, the Seahawks are going to get Carlos Dunlap by paying him some money. They're going to pay him about $5 million for the balance of the season. And trading BJ Finney, a player that they acquired in the offseason, who has not started for them. As far as I know, he hasn't played a snap on their offensive line. He's played some in special teams, but never out there as either a center or a guard. And Seattle gets Carlos Dunlap for an offensive lineman they weren't using in a 7th-round pick.
Back-to-back trade deadlines, John Schneider has robbed a team. 5th-round pick for Quandre Diggs. A 7th-round pick and a guy who hasn't played for Carlos Dunlap. And let's give a shout-out to Carlos Dunlap. Thank you, Carlos, for burning down the house on your way out, or putting your house up for sale on the way out, because I don't know that they would have been able to get him, Danny, this cheap.
When I saw that Dunlap had posted that over the weekend, that he basically posted a real estate listing for his place in Cincinnati, making it very clear he wanted out. He wanted someone else to take that spot. He was part of a defensive line rotation. He didn't like that. Felt he didn't have time for that at this point in his career. A guy that's been in the league since 2010. I wondered if this is the second in-season trade that the Bengals have made going back to the 1980s.
Wow.
The only other time Cincinnati's traded a player in-season in the past 30 years was when Carson Palmer was dealt to the Raiders. And at that time, Palmer wasn't even playing for them. He was in the second year he'd retired at that point. So this is not how Cincinnati does business. Seattle ends up trading a 7th-round pick and BJ Finney to get Carlos Dunlap. Now, the second question I'll have is, if Dunlap was that devastating of a player or that good of a player, Cincinnati probably would have been able to get more for him on the open market. It's not like Seattle was the only team they were talking to, but certainly I would agree with you, Paul, that getting a player who has had between 7 and 10 sacks for the past 7 seasons, this is a significant upgrade.
Yeah, and honestly, I thought you would have had to give up more for it. I don't know that the cost for Dunlap speaks about what you're getting in Dunlap either. I think in B.J. Finney, my assumption is that Cincinnati saw some of the same things that maybe the Seahawks had seen on film from Finney in the scouting that they do of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who they play twice a year. And they thought to themselves, man, if Joe Burrow takes another hit this year, what's going to happen? Now, the contract situation as well for next year for Carlos Dunlap, his salary does jump up, I think, as far as his cap figure. I think it jumps up to plus $10 million. So that is also something that I think Cincinnati's looking at, thinking to themselves, yeah, we're probably going to cut this guy at the end of the year anyway. We're not even playing him. Let's see what we can get in return for somebody who has a pretty substantial contract. So that's my assumption as to why it's just a seventh-round pick in B.J. Finney. They realize that that contract kind of limits what they could realistically get in return for him.
I don't think next year's guaranteed. I don't think he has a prohibitively high, like if they choose right to cut him, I don't think it's a huge toll off of Seattle's cap. But Seattle gets a guy who is 6'6", is an experienced pass rusher, and the question will be, how much of a difference does that make in your team? Is this enough to push your pass rush to being adequate? Al Michaels said in the third quarter of Sunday's game that, hey, if the Seahawks don't make the Super Bowl this year, it's going to be because they don't get pass pressure. Well, they just went out and traded for a veteran and acquired a guy at the deadline, as you pointed out. Something John Schneider has made a habit of, whether it's Dwayne Brown, whether it's Quandre Diggs, now Carlos Dunlap, of waiting where the price on a player goes to, this is the lowest point it's going to get. It is way more expensive to acquire a player in the offseason than it is at this point because you're having to make midstream adjustments to work him in. Does this, how much of an impact will this make on your defense?
And I can't quite answer that because they're going to have to figure out how to work him in. And I don't think that this means Super Bowl by any means, but you needed to bring in somebody. And I think the hope is that you're bringing in a guy who was a malcontent in Cincinnati and that chip on his shoulder can be something that the Seahawks find to their advantage. And a guy who has played for just a wretched organization for all of this time finally finds himself on a contending team and he's going to play better. And that's where I'll ask you, Danny, about the history of the Seahawks when it comes to bringing in these guys who were malcontents in other places. We've obviously seen it with Marshawn Lynch. I think we saw it with Percy Harvin. Definitely a varying degree of success when it comes to the returns on those trades. And this is not a guy who is anywhere close to those two players as far as talent goes. But they have had a history of bringing in guys who were unhappy in their current situations.
Seattle excels at providing a fresh start for players. It doesn't always work out, and sometimes when it does work out, it doesn't last long. I think this is probably the easiest sell of all of these. Carlos Dunlap was unhappy because he's a player in his 11th season who found him third on the defensive end rotation. He was falling out of the plans of a team that is clearly rebuilding with a rookie quarterback who looks good. And at this point in his career, he doesn't have time. Carlos, and specifically said, didn't have time to go with an experiment to figure out whether how a new defensive line rotation would work in Cincinnati. He wanted a place that he can contend now. I think that this is the sort of situation that kind of sells itself. He comes to a team that has Super Bowl hopes and expectations. He comes to a team that very much needs pass rush. And he's a guy who, over the past 10 years, has established himself as someone who's only had double-digit sacks once. But he is consistently at 7 or more sacks. It's absolutely unbelievable the way he's been able to do that.
Have you ever wondered what that adjustment is like for players going from one organization to the next when they go from a bad organization to a good one? We saw it with Jamal Adams this offseason. We're seeing the opposite of it with Bradley McDougal going to the Jets this offseason. That's something I've always been fascinated by. Do you find yourself almost overwhelmed by how different the culture is in a winning organization after having been in one that clearly isn't that for so long?
Well, you get this fresh start, and you get it in a place where Pete Carroll approaches it with unlimited praise. You're going to hear the honeymoon period in this deal is going to sound great. It's going to be awesome. You're going to hear about Carlos Dunlap's history of production. You're going to hear about what he feels about this new opportunity, vaulting from being in a team that was worried about finishing in last in their division to a team that is hoping for the number one overall seed. All of those different things you're going to hear about how great it sounds. At the end of the day, the measurement of this is how much good football Carlos Dunlap has left. He's a great player. He's had a tremendously consistent career. He's also available, and you get him for a seventh-round pick, and B.J. Finney, who was beat out for the starting center job by Ethan Posick, you get him for way less than I would have expected, because there's not a lot of teams that believe that he's got a ton of good football left in him, and or certainly are willing to pay him $5 million for the remaining 10 games of this season.
Is that an indictment? There are tons of bad defenses across the NFL. You would think that there are other guys who are calling about Carlos Dunlap. I mean, he basically made himself available to the entire league by doing what he did on Sunday.
Yeah. Was there another team that was willing to pay him $500,000 a game? I mean, it's not nothing. At this point in the season, that's not $5 million. The outstanding balance of his salary this year is still a significant chunk of change for teams.
Should it be, though? I mean, as far as capital goes, the money thing in the NFL, like I don't think that should ever be a limitation as far as like what you're paying the guy. I understand from maybe a cap perspective, but a seventh-round pick and a guy who hasn't played this year, that's all it took.
It's possible that Cincinnati, which has some experience with B.J. Finney because he was with the Steelers,
that's what
they've probably seen him some. So maybe they will believe that, hey, B.J. Finney is someone who can come here and make an impact. Maybe they do think that that is a player that we want, and we're going to have to take back somebody, and that, hey, he might not have won the starting job in Seattle, but we believe he can come in here and help. And instead of just writing off the entire Dunlap expense as a wash, we're going to get a player back that we think we can use.
And you're really giving up nothing that hurts you. The seventh round pick and B.J. Finney, I mean, my goodness, he couldn't even get on the field when there were injuries to Damian Lewis. You know, when you've had the interior offensive lineman banged up, it's been Jordan Simmons and Jamarco Jones.
It is Danny and Gallant. We will have a few more updates, and Clayton certainly will bring through the news on John Schneider's latest edition, Carlos Dunlap, when the professor comes on the air at 10 a.m. this morning. But it is Danny and Gallant. The Seahawks have a new defensive end. That deal won't be announced officially until later today. I think it's this afternoon, but Seattle has agreed to terms on acquiring Carlos Dunlap for B.J. Finney and a seventh-round pick in next year's draft. We'll be back with our flags next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is Danny and Gallant. Some news coming down this hour. The Seahawks trading for Carlos Dunlap. Came out just an hour ago, and we know that it's for a seventh-round pick and acquiring B.J. Finney, who has not played a snap on the offensive line this season, an off-season free agent that was signed. It appears that the Seahawks have gotten away with robbery, Paul.
Yes, they have gotten away with robbery. I mean, they gave up a guy that hasn't played and a seventh-round pick for a pass rusher that you would think will be a big contributor in January. Pretty easy.
Should be. The question of how much does he have left, and is this it? Do you add something else?
I mean, you didn't give up much to get him, so
nope.
You definitely have the ability to add something else. If this had been something where you gave up a second round pick or, I don't know, another first round pick, I don't know if you can trade anymore.
No,
that would be one thing.
I don't think you, unless you're really just going to say we don't care what happens down the road.
Yeah, you're just punting entirely on the future. So, you gave up almost nothing. I still think that you can go after somebody else. You also have Snacks Harrison yet to have set foot on the field for the Seahawks. So, Pete, talking about those reinforcements coming on Monday, I was a little skeptical when talking about it yesterday, Danny, with Bump. Oh, Jamal Adams, Daryl Taylor coming back, that's going to make things better. Now you have a little bit more leeway to say something like that.
Now, I will say that the credit, John Schneider always works. And his willingness to take on guys, either at roster cutdown time or at the trade deadline, a lot of teams sort of become reluctant to make moves, especially if they're good or going well, thinking like, I don't want to disrupt anything and I'm not sure how he'll fit. John will always err on the side of ability. If he thinks it makes him better, he'll do it. And they consistently make off-season additions, but in-season additions that have an impact. Dwayne Brown, Quandre Diggs, now Carlos Dunlap. We'll see how this pans out. Your flag, Paul.
I'm raising a flag to John Schneider. Back-to-back trade deadlines, the guys made a move. He brought in a safety when the Seahawks did not have one last year. I mean, you were going through Tedrick Thompson and Lano Hill, and you find a guy in Quandre Diggs who, for whatever reason, was not valued by Detroit. I'd like to see a little more Diggs this season than we have, but nice to see him get that interception against Arizona. Maybe that's a confidence boost going forward. Maybe that's something that can help him continue to get those takeaways. And maybe when Jamal Adams comes back, you get to see what we saw out of him last year where he looked like a Pro Bowl safety. And you bring in Carlos Dunlap at the trade deadline now. Bare minimum, they have done something to address their issues that they clearly were aware of for the first half of the season in back-to-back years. I like having a general manager that's aggressive like that as opposed to sitting on their hands and thinking, you know, the players we have are eventually going to figure it out. So, fantastic job, John Schneider, and I hope that he's not done. I hope that there's another move that's made.
DJ.
I'd like to raise a flag for Rays pitcher Blake Snell. He deserved to finish that game. He absolutely deserved to finish that game. I don't care what the analytics say. And I hate hearing the pain in his voice from his press conference yesterday. You can just hear that he has a little bit of disdain right now for Kevin Cash.
No, I mean, definitely disappointed, upset. You know, I don't know. I just want the ball. I felt good. I did everything I could to, you know, prove my case to stay out there. You know, it's going to be tough, man. Like, I get it's a third time through the lineup, but, I mean, I think I'm going to make the adjustments I need to make as I see them, you know, a third time. I don't know, man. I just believe in me. I believe in my stuff. I believe in, you know, what I was doing. I didn't walk nobody. They had two, you know, hits up the middle, you know. The slider to Barnes, you know, tip your cap. That was a bad pitch. And he got a hit off that. Good job. But for most of that game, man, I was dominating every outcome possible.
And as Paul said earlier, that doesn't sound like a guy that wants to play for Kevin Cash anymore. So while we're on the topic of trades, according to Spotrac.com, he's not a free agent until 2024. Blake Snell, yeah. Jerry, bring him home.
But he's wanting, what Blake Snell is wanting is a big, fat contract, right? He's wanting a big, fat deal. He's already playing, I'd be interested. It's probably going to cost too much, like, honestly. But, man, that idea of jump-starting with the hometown kid, product of Shorewood High School, Thunderbird, bring him home.
That excites me.
Wouldn't hate it.
Yep. That or Trevor Bauer, who works up here. Really, I think any of those veteran options, especially one who's ticked off like Snell. Like, if you're Snell, how do you go back to this team? How do you go back to a manager that clearly had no faith in you with 5 1/3 innings pitched and just 73 pitches? He's going to pull you from a game because he thinks that the great and powerful Mookie Betts, who you've struck out twice in the game, is going to take you out? And then he doubles against the next pitcher that comes in. Just insane thinking, overthinking. And I don't know how Kevin Cash is going to live with this one. I really don't.
I'm not going to raise a flag today. Instead, I'm going to raise a banana peel. And it's in honor of my dog, Peach. Peach the Shar Pei. Every morning, Peach would eat probably about 1/3 of a banana. It was the leftover from my wife's smoothie. She wouldn't use a full banana, and Peach loved the banana. She loved it so much, in fact, that Sharon trained her to wear the banana peel as a hat. There would be a good banana hat, and Peach would have to sit with that banana peel perched on her head as a hat before she got the banana, and she liked the banana so much she went through that ritualized humiliation. Eventually, when she got sick, we stopped doing that. She earned her banana pension. She just got it. We had to put my poor pay down yesterday. And we had her for 8 years. She was a rescue, adopted from Kelly Starbuck out at Mercer Island Orphans and Waifs, their canine division. She is a patron saint of Shar Pei and all sorts of dogs, a really lovely person. Peach came here in 2013. She had bad eyesight, needed eye surgery, and heartworm. And that dog, who came here from South Korea, was one of the toughest little beings I have ever come across in my life, and she fought true to her nature all the way up until the end. And we had to have her put to sleep yesterday. She had been diagnosed with lymphoma, preliminary diagnosis last week on top of already having kidney disease. It's been brutal. I'm grateful for the support of my coworkers like DJ Paul and Michael Bumpus, who stepped in yesterday, for all of the compassion of listeners. And I'm really grateful for the 8 years that I got to spend with that dog. Dogs are awesome, man, because they live in the now. They don't worry about what happened before. They don't worry about what's going to happen. They are happy to see you. And in these 8 years, as I've changed really professions, as I quit drinking, as I lost my mom, Peach was a constant piece of bedrock. And I hope and I believe that we gave her a good life. I know how much she made our lives better. And I'm going to miss her an awful lot.
I know you gave her a great life. I'm going to miss the occasional woof in the background. I'm going to miss you guys yelling, pizza crust time, Peach, in the background, too. Sorry for your loss, Danny, but you know that's what makes pets wonderful. When you lose them, it's so hard, but you get to think about all the great times that you had with them, and you get to know that you gave this animal an incredible life.
Heidi Lowe, who works in our ad sales, is a wonderful person in our ad sales department. She said it best, which is that we're there for all of their lives, and they're only there for part of ours. And it's a blessing and it's a curse. We get to remember about them, but we also miss them. So rest in peace to Peach, and thanks everybody for their compassion and for you guys helping yesterday and today. That's going to do it for us. We want to thank John Clayton for joining us, as he does each and every morning. Michael Bumpus, it was Bump Day. It was fantastic. And he is Paul Gallant, and maybe his desire for a pass rusher has been sated now that the Seahawks have gone and dealt for Carlos Dunlap.
I'm very, very happy, and he is Danny O'Neill. He loves dogs. We all love dogs. They're the best. So long, farewell, and you will hear us tomorrow.